Continuing on our conversation this morning, particularly when it comes to green energy. Yesterday at Invest Malaysia 2021, the Prime Minister, Finance Minister, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, discussed at length about how the country is going to present some sort of a seed fund towards creating a carbon capture exchange. There's a lot that needs to be unpacked here. Let's start off with our conversation with Dato' Dr. Rais Hussein, the CEO and President of Emirates Research, joining us live online. Dr. Rais, maybe you can share with us the landscape of how things are and how things look like when it comes to carbon capture exchange. In fact, carbon capture per se, Rais.
As you all know, carbon credit these days a buzzword among, globally. It's a huge market. First of all, let's establish why do they actually need the carbon credit. We all know that we are all trying to mitigate the climate change issues by reducing the greenhouse gas emission, which is normally called as GHG. However, many businesses find it very difficult and they cannot, although trying so much to reduce the emission. Because of this challenging moments and challenging times, especially with climate control and so on, it is obvious and apparent that the net zero emission objectives are met. Now we see some of the shareholders and some of the even investors have made it a mandate for them, for the companies to achieve a certain desired level of net zero emissions before they invest. So obviously there are two types of carbon credit, the voluntary one, or what we call the voluntary carbon credit, or also the mandated one. So what we are talking about today is voluntary one. Now, if you look at in the Malaysian context, if you look at the size of the market, global credit, carbon credit worldwide, it is upwards towards 50 billion, reaching by 2030. So it's a massive, massive Malaysia was established
in 2011 to facilitate the trading of carbon credit. I think it's not quite known, but it's called Malaysian National Carbon Credit Registry. However, this is done on a voluntary basis, comes under the purview of Ministry of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change. Now, however, the progress is not been that good. We only registered about 1.5 million carbon credit, resulting in a reduction of about 1.2 million tons. It's a very, very modest number, but it's a start. So yesterday's announcement by the Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, in the context of facilitating the new ecosystem and enabling the ecosystem for carbon credit, is a welcome relief and reprieve for the industry. Malaysia can be and must be someone who can spearhead this carbon credit.
Let's go back to that whole conversation of what was announced yesterday, because this is not, I guess, not something new, but for the elaboration on what has been presented in the budget, the government is committing to a seed fund amounting to about 10 million ringgit to act as an assured demand of Malaysian-generated carbon credits to kickstart the market to support the national journey to achieve that net zero emissions as early as 2050. Dato' Sri Anwar said that there is a need for us to enhance our investments in green growth areas, including hydrogen tech, bioenergy, electric mobility. These are the enablers of green adoption across sectors as well as future economic engines. And because of this, do you see how far are we from achieving these net zero emission targets by 2050? In fact, what would be the kind of challenges that is stopping us from achieving these targets right now?
I think it is it's a good start that all this has been thought about and clearly the direction has been set. I think that is the good start. However, there are many more efforts that needed to be done in educating the public, the organization, the company, what carbon credit entails. Sometimes they loosely translate carbon credit as carbon a replacement. I think that is incorrect. So we need to be very mindful. Now, coming to one of the most important infrastructure in the carbon credit in any nation and any country is setting up of the or digitizing the carbon credit accounting. You see, the important part of it, it will improve efficiency, transparency, and accessibility. But we do have challenges like, for instance, even the reliability of the data, reliability of whether actually the carbon credit has happened, who is valuing it, how it is being valued, what about the cost levels, what about the pricing level. There's a mismatch between the pricing of these carbon credits as well as the actual cost that entails. Then again, there are some challenges with regards to the lag time between when it was priced and when it's taken up. So there are many, many challenges and issues are there, but I think we need to look at seriously of digitizing the entire infrastructure. So I'm talking about the registry itself. And without digitizing it and based on blockchain, there could always be some confidence level vis-a-vis ascribed to the carbon credit exchange.
Okay. Do we need that kind of infra support that needs to support this energy transition to have good hydrogen technology, to have strong bioenergy growth and development, and perhaps be a central feature in electric mobility, for instance? In fact, a rather blunt question, is 10 million ringgit enough for the seed fund to generate this kind of catalytic growth for energy transition?
Boost this particular sector. But obviously, 10 million ringgit is a modest amount. But it's a good start. And people are still trying to understand how the whole mechanism works. I think, again, I said, if we do not digitize the carbon credit accounting, then we will have a big challenge. Who is going? I mean, we know that in the context of Malaysia, we have this our Bursa taking the lead, but it is important the entire process to be digitized. And what are the benefits of that digitizing this carbon credit registry? Yeah, I'm not even talking about exchange. First of all, increased transparency. One of the big issues and challenges that global carbon credit entities are facing is that in terms of credibility, there have been some investigation been commenced where carbon credit registry have been questioned whether it's actually the real carbon credit. We know that, remember, like for instance, a company or an organization is allowed a certain level of emission. And anything beyond that, they are taxable, or they need to pay a fine or something like that to protect the globally. Now, they also sometimes they overshoot that emission, and then they must start looking for other companies who have not overshoot that. Maybe they have some surplus of carbon credit, and then they will trade. So this is where we need to have a banking grade type of registry with all the relevant check and balance in the system in terms of pricing, costing, timing. Is it true that a carbon credit will exist in first place? And how is it accounted for? So this, again, it's very, very critical for any success. So I think 10 million ringgit is just, as you use the word catalytic, and just as a start, a catalyst. But I think more will come.
Okay, let's bring in the graphics that we have right now when it comes to the kind of energy transition. If you can just in the graphics right now on the screen. This graphics basically shows the kind of energy transition that we can exploit when it comes to global greenhouse gas emissions. As you can see, energy constitutes close to 3/4 of the global greenhouse usage. And of course, agriculture constitutes the other 20%. So all in all, energy and agriculture is going to be used quite extensively. Do you feel that this kind of energy transition, when it comes to global greenhouse gases, needs to address, say, for instance, the energy portion first before we jump into all the other sectors that is needed to address this kind of change when it comes to energy transition? Dr. Rais?
Isn't the data looks very staggering? This is data they got from 2016, but this is the current most data that they have. 72%, that's an immense figure for the emission as a result of energy. We all know, for instance, on one end, they contribute to a lot of this carbon emission or gas and all that. But on the other end, the prices of this particular thing gone up two, threefold in Europe, for instance. So what does that mean? Obviously, we need to look at how we address. I mean, companies like in Malaysia, for instance, Petronas and Shell and all that, who are actually producing oil and all that, they're really looking for what we call carbon credits that they need to have. So these are the big, big markets, even in-house, that has been built. So what happens? They all have their own net zero targets, not forgetting Tenaga Nasional, for instance. So what happens when they cannot find they themselves for net credit? They have to buy the net credit, carbon credit, in the global market. What happens then? Then the money goes out of the country. So when you create a registry in Malaysia, and closely and blockchain-based, yeah, so that there will be no hacking capabilities, no issues with regards to credibility, no issues to many other challenges that the carbon credit registry is facing worldwide. Then what happens is that we create a centrality of market in Malaysia for carbon credit. Forget not, there are also natural carbon credit that we have. We have the one of the oldest rainforests in the world. It's not the oldest. In Belum Forest, for instance, we have a large chunk and tracts of forest in Sabah. So all this can be encashed. French Guiana president, for instance, have said very clearly that one of the revenues, apart from the recent discovery of the oil and oil and gas in that territory, is carbon credit. So I think a holistic approach has to be made, and we need to get it right from the beginning. If we do not get it right, we do a piecemeal, and then we try to correct here and there, will be a problem. So I think there are ample good practices in this space that we can see worldwide, like that of in the US, who has been spearheading this. In UK, for instance, has been spearheading this. We need to take these good practices and then realize here and actualize here. So it's like when you want to do something, you need to emulate or copy the country that has done it right. So I'll just give you another example. We all know single wholesale network for 5G is a proven failure worldwide. So why do we want to copy that in Malaysia, for instance? I'm just giving an example. So these are the things. But this 10 million ringgit is just the beginning, I think, for the startup ecosystem in this space. But I'm sure eventually there'll be more to come.
Okay. If you can just, in the detail of the graphics right now, taking in from my iPad, we look at the energy at 73%, 73.2%. Let me just see if I can just pull this in. So energy use in industry is a quarter right now. And of course, when we look at transportation, it's also 16%. And energy use in buildings is actually 17%. So do you feel that these are the areas that we need to focus on? Energy use in buildings, transport, and of course, industry. These should be the three key components when it comes to trying to bring about cleaner energy and better energy transition?
Absolutely. Because we all know that the amount of emission as a result of transportation and the energy use in the industry, that means, and also the third part as well, it's massive. And we cannot continue not tracking and observing this. Again, we must start at a good footing. We cannot simply cut and paste things that is that we will need a lot of tweaking in the future. So the way to go, I'm repeating this many times. The way to go is to digitize the entire carbon credit register, and then also the exchange, blockchain based, so that there will be no hacking possibilities and gives a lot of credibility. In terms of energy, 72%, it's a wall. And not many people knew that this is going to be this bad, but that's how it is.
All right. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a bit more with Dato' Dr. Rais Hussein. Thanks for continuing on with us. We are with Dato' Dr. Rais Hussein, who's joining us live via online. We are talking about the kind of items that is coming in from energy transition conversations following the Invest Malaysia Summit that was happening yesterday, or that happened yesterday. We need to talk a little bit more about the Bursa Carbon Exchange, Dr. Rais. It was launched in December last year, just 3 months ago, and it was presented as a vital catalyst in the acceleration towards a net zero emission target by 2050. Notably, this is the first exchange in the world to receive a Sharia pronouncement for its carbon exchange program. Do you feel that the Bursa Carbon Exchange is a good step forward when it comes to carbon exchange, carbon capture exchange to be created? Where do you see Bursa Carbon Exchange moving forward when it comes to energy transition?
I think the sky is the limit. We all know that we need a credible exchange, and Bursa spearheading this is a good move. And now the only other thing that is important is to put a blockchain-based carbon exchange on top of it. And on top of it, they also need the proper blockchain-based, completely digitized register, which will have all the available carbon credit in Malaysia, and then open for to be purchased. Either by local companies, local organization, or more importantly, that is to keep the money within the shores, but also to bring investment inside Malaysia by, like for instance, Singapore. They need a carbon credit, and they need to go and find where to buy. So Malaysia has that. Both, the one is the natural part of the need, which is with the forest and this and that. We have that certain accounting for it, and that accounting has to be, again, transparent. And then on top of that, that other carbon credits is available. So I think this is important, because it will then obviously increase transparency, increase efficiency of how it's being done, increase control in terms of putting it properly and proper context, bringing in new investment. We are all looking for investment. Carbon credit can be a good source of investment. In fact, the French Guiana president even said that there's going to be the third largest incoming investment or inbound investment, apart from the oil and gas and tourism, and increased revenue for the country in both ways. One is from outside organization buying carbon credit, like for instance, Japan needs a lot of carbon credit. China needs massive carbon credit. And imagine that we will be able to market this. But to do that, the kickoff of 10 million ringgit is good, but we need more. We need to urgently set up a fully digitalized blockchain-based registry to enable that. So I think, remember, the carbon credits comes in like four types of category. Yeah? One is the avoided nature loss, which including deforestation. Nature-based sequestration, such as reforestation, you put back a name, avoidance or reduction of emissions, such as methane from landfills and technology-based remove carbonate. Remember, we talk about landfills. We just got back from Barcelona. We were told that 500 billion connected devices or devices will be there to connect 8.7 billion population in 2030. Yeah? So nowadays, everything is now benchmarked against 2030. That's 59 times more. What are we going to do? So there's a huge potential, massive potential. And even when McKinsey came out with a figure that it's going to upwards 50 billion global carbon credit market and the multiples of 100, I think it is still understated and very conservative. So Malaysia must take the initiative, but do it the right way.
Dr. Ayes, I want to pick your brain on this particular topic. I did not discuss this particular topic beforehand in arranging this interview with you, but perhaps it is timely. The Natural Resources, Environment and Climate Change Ministry organized the Energy Transition Town Hall on the 7th of March, 2 days ago. The NRECC Minister, Nick Nazmi, said that the orthodoxies must be challenged to accelerate energy transition in Malaysia. And the session saw Nick Nazmi and Rafizi Ramli, the economics minister, as well as panelists from other energy industry experts, answering questions from stakeholders. Long story short, the policy right now is to not export renewable energy out. So while we're talking about energy transition, maybe we can talk about renewable energy and the ability for us to export it out. Right now, the policy is to not export. Do you feel that this is the right way moving forward when it comes to exporting or non-exporting renewable energy?
I think we have a short-term, medium-term, long-term strategy. So in the short term, obviously, we should not be exporting renewable energy because that's a in-house or in-country carbon credit that we have. I think some of the big tech, the four big tech companies, like Amazon, and I mean, recently they announced they're coming to Malaysia, spending some billions over a period of 14, 15 years. Now, they're all also present in Singapore, and also some big tech companies were considering to go to Singapore. The only reason, one of the reasons that they couldn't go to Singapore is because Singapore does not have sufficient level of, this renewable energy type of, so that they will get a certain classification, the green classification for their data centers and so on. So they then chose to go to like Indonesia, they go to Malaysia and so on. Now, yes, for now, maybe on a short term, medium term, we may go easy on exporting because we need that renewable energy, we need the carbon credit, we need that emission reducing the emission capabilities using renewable energy. That's correct. But the classification is important. However, in the longer term, we have this Bakun Dam, for instance. Bakun Dam, as you understand, is a huge investment, and there are many countries that are looking at buying power from them. And this is a very important source of energy that can be attached for the state of Sarawak. Like in the European market, you have the UK importing excess capacity from Germany through some undersea fiber interconnectivity. So can we sell this type of energy from originating from Bakun Dam, apart from serving Sabah and Sarawak, Kalimantan, can we sell it to others? I think the question and the answer is very simple. We should, but this is in the long term because it will have added revenues, badly needed added revenues, income for Sarawak so that they can develop even bigger. So I think there's a phased strategy. Yes, in the short term, medium term, we keep this renewable energy here because then we can encash the carbon credit and we can also contribute and help us towards this net zero emission in 2050. So yes, but in the long term, we need to consider that things like Bakun Dam, it's huge investment that we have invested. There's a huge capacity there. So why cannot we export this energy to countries that need from us?
Okay. Going back to our initial topic, which is energy transition, and the speech that was given by Dato' Sri Anwar at Invest Malaysia, he mentioned that other forms of support in this area come in the form of a green technology financing scheme, investment tax allowance and income tax exemption for eligible activities. Anwar added that while we talk about a viable future for the environment where respect for the planet and quality of life are the driving principles, it is a natural fit for further development and support through Islamic finance, a field where Malaysia has been long recognised as a global leader. He argues that the government is committed in enhancing the Islamic finance ecosystem even further so that it can drive real societal change, especially through optimisation of wakaf. In this regard, he argues that the Securities Commission, with effective from 3rd of April this year, just 1 month to go, will extend the Wakaf Featured Fund Framework to include the Islamic Real Estate Investment Trust and Islamic Exchange Traded Funds. So do you feel that these kind of facilities and financing capabilities, as managed by SC, for instance, can help facilitate the driving force on energy transition and carbon capture and just generally building a better framework for us to achieve net zero emissions by 2050? And more importantly, where do you see Islamic finance sit in the value chain of us creating a better future when it comes to energy transition?
I think Islamic finance is another word for conventional finance. I think it is basically almost no different apart from lexicon. But the most important aspect of what was captured by Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim in this context is Wakaf. I think Wakaf is an important element in the catalyzing and pushing and moving the economy as a whole. And the unfortunate thing is that Wakaf in Malaysia, for instance, has been quite in the slumberland for many, many years. I think it's time to energize Wakaf. If you look at Turkey, for instance, Wakaf is a very important element and factor in India economy. I'm talking about real Wakaf. They run universities. They run so there are two types of Wakaf. There's a cash and a non-cash Wakaf. So coming back to Malaysia, I think Wakaf is definitely the way to go. But I don't see much difference between Islamic finance and conventional finance, as it were. Apart from the lexicon and maybe layers of contract that Islamic finance has. But that's being truthful. And having said that, yes, this is a product innovation, and we have been a global leader in many the Islamic finance front, like Sukuk and the issuance of Sukuk. We are one of the largest issuers of Sukuk in the world. So having said that, yes, whatever works. But the most important thing, I've emphasized this quite a bit this time around, is that the digitization of the registry and the digitization of the exchange, but blockchain-based. Because we need to give a bank-grade type of infrastructure. When I say bank-grade, basically when you do your ATM transaction, you do your banking transaction, the back office is very, very bank-grade, very rigorous, very robust, very redundant, very resilient. And that is the type of infrastructure you need to provide to be successful in carbon credit, i.e. carbon credit registry and carbon credit exchange. And you can extend this by having carbon credit, Malaysian carbon credit, to be exchangeable and be bought by in the region. Let's for once be ahead of the country down south. So let's be ahead of it. They, for unique reason, they may not be able to do what they plan to. They do have exchange, but they may not be able to come up with a good registry because their land space and everything is quite small. In the context of Malaysia, let's for once move on. Let's be clever.
All right. Another key part of emphasis is to ensure that Malaysians also gain from transfer of high-tech knowledge and skills, prioritizing research and development. We're looking at areas of developing further on TVET, or the technical and vocational training that is being redesigned for greater participation in private sectors or from private sectors. And of course, we're looking at collaborations with conventional academia and perhaps some form of updates towards university syllabi across the board. Do you feel that TVET is actually quite critical in terms of us trying to build that kind of workforce that is a little bit more attuned to the requirements that is needed when it comes to carbon capture, exchange and energy transition?
It is not quite critical. It is very critical, Ibrahim, because without a proper talent that is required, I think we all know Malaysia has been suffering from brain drain for a very long time. I think we've lost quite a hefty number. It does statistically, anything between 500,000 to 1.2 million have left our shores to go elsewhere. And we can't blame them because they want certain things that they that there's a pull and push factor, right, that I always describe. But let's not go into detail on the brain drain. But yes, TVET is very critical for the success of this. And universities must start learning to see what is relevant, what cannot be like a factory mill producing same old, using the old syllabus and old stuff. So you were spot on. And also Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim was spot on when he talked about the recalibration of the syllabus to reflect the current reality, the cloud reality. Now, I mean, some time ago, we all will read laboriously in the library, take notes, and then we start writing term papers and assignments. After some time, we start just Googling. Now we have ChatGPT, which is AI empowered, which can do everything that you ask for. So things have changed. So I think the curriculum has to be revisited, reviewed, and recalibrated to reflect the current reality. TVET is a very important thing. Do not have like 8 years, 10 years, you know, people get, by the time that you, after the end of the first year or second year, the syllabus is again, you need to be reviewed because technology changed very fast. So I think we need to also look at how we can shorten the length of studying and bring in the right skill, knowledge and abilities, and also the right curriculum to create the right talent pool so that we can partake in this carbon credit. It's a big thing, huh? It's a multi-billion dollars. As I said, some have actually come up with a figure of in excess of 753 billion, but McKinsey says 50 billions upwards. That's 2030 to 2050, where everybody wants net zero emission. So it's a huge market, and we are well positioned. At least we can start, but start in the right mode. And replica and copy the right model. Do not do what we did with the 5G rollout, which is until today not done.
Okay. That's enough on the topic of energy conversation. I still want to maybe spend 2 or 3 minutes to talk about the national brain drain that you alluded to earlier. This is because the Human Resources Ministry is drafting measures to tackle the brain drain phenomenon, which is at 5.5% of our population. And this is much higher than the global average of 3.3%, says the HR Minister Siva Kumar. He argues that a total of 1.86 million Malaysians live abroad, and out of that, 1.13 million stay in Singapore. So imagine that, 1.8 million outside, of which 1.13 is in Singapore. This is comments coming in from TalentCorp Dialogue that happened on Tuesday, 7th of March. And according to the United Nations Department of Economics and Social Affairs in 2020, the main destinations for the Malaysian diaspora are Singapore, Bangladesh, Australia, the UK, the US and Brunei. And it was part of that long-term task to attract Malaysians back to the country. Do you feel that because of this brain drain that is happening, we all know wages is a big problem in Malaysia, but new sectors to talk about, like energy transition, for instance, or carbon capture could be a way in for us to attract back our talent that is coming in from outside?
We have to look at the push and pull factor. I think not many studies has been made in this area except reporting statistics. I think the TalentCorp, we all know the number that they brought back is abysmally low relative to those who have left. We did a research, a little bit more of a qualitative research, and we found that more than 500,000 have left our shores. These are the productive ones, professional, computer, age between 25 upwards. And this has lost, this has resulted in loss of human capital that is so badly needed to energize the country, the economy. So I think there's a whole lot of a subject that really require an in-depth look and deep diving, especially this is going to be the important engine, because without human capital, you can have the best of the infrastructure, but nothing is going to work. And so I think it's a very important thing that the government should look at, or at least Anwar Ibrahim administration should look at, even review and revisit what is Talent Corp really doing? I think we can't blame them too much also because, again, there's a push factor, pull factor, social, economic, you know, a lot of other things that comes in a way. Many people think it is just the gaji, the salary and wages. It's not necessarily true. So there's a wholesome package that they get. Like, for instance, a lot of them goes to Singapore. There's one guy who went to New Zealand, for instance, and he recreated MySejahtera apps for free. And today, this guy has become a Kiwi and he's been given a house, this, that, and he's pretty much settled there. And we lost a huge human capital because this guy is really good. Yeah. His app was copied everywhere. So likewise, we have very good heart surgeons in Australia. The best heart surgeons has gone to UK. So, and then we don't forget the doctors also are leaving. So this is a serious problem and warrants a very serious discussion amongst all the stakeholders. Yes, the Human Resource Ministry and so on.
Yeah.
So the problem is that, Ibrahim, is that when we talk about these issues, we are not policy shaping issues. We are just talking that as like a cut and paste cosmetic without the importance of input, output, outcome, impact model, where we spend money, but we do not look at the outcome and impact. We just input, output, speed to spend.
Thank you very much, Dato' Dr. Rais Hussein, the CEO and President of Emir Research, for that delightful conversation.